Hello everyone, this is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1PLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. I'm reading for you today, in digest format, the QCWA Journal for the summer of 2011. This recording is produced in cooperation with the QCWA by the Courage Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham and QCWA members only. Any of these may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may reach at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. The Handy Ham website is www.handyham.org. If you have need to contact the QCWA, their business office is P.O. Box 3247, Framingham, Massachusetts, M.A., zip code 01705. Their voice phone number is 508-405-1930. The fax number, 508-405-1965. And the business office email is qcwagm@rcn.com. The editor-designer of the QCWA Journal is Douglas Walbridge. The webmaster, Bob Roski, call November 0, Uniform Foxtrot, N0UF. The QCWA Journal is published four times a year, quarterly, by the Quarter Century Wireless Association. Membership in the QCWA, including a subscription to the journal, is available to individuals who qualify in the United States and its possessions at the following rates: $25 per year, $40 per 2 years, $55 per 3 years, and $500 for life. For Canadian and foreign membership rates, please contact the business office. A commentary on this month's cover. QCWA member Leo I. Myerson, called W0GFQ, passed away at age 100 on April 14, 2011, in Rancho Mirage, California. Leo was born in Council Bluffs, Iowa, and lived in Omaha, Nebraska, in Palm Springs, California. Upon celebrating his 100th birthday, Leo received nearly 2,000 birthday cards from his friends around the world. Recently, the mayor of Council Bluffs officially proclaimed March 7th as Leo Myerson Day. Now, for your listeners, as we go through the publication, we will definitely read a significant commentary relative to Leo Myerson and his marvelous accomplishments in his lifetime. His story and commentary is titled Remembering Leo. The author is Dick Clark, call K6GLB. I must say that the cover itself for the summer 2011 QCWA Journal is indeed a very striking one. It's always in full color. The photographs were supplied by Pat DeLong, KD7KEL. The montage was coordinated by QCWA editor Douglas Walbridge. The Quarter Century Wireless Association can be found on the internet at http://www.qcwa.org. And now here's a reminder of where you can participate on the air or listen to the QCWA National Nets. For single sideband, it's on a Sunday at 2000 Zulu. The frequency there is at 14.347. The CW net is on Wednesdays at 2400 Zulus. That's on Wednesday. Of course, that's 0 Zulu Thursday. The frequency, 7.035. The QCWA officers and board of directors as follows: President Bob Roski and 0UF. Vice President Ken Olke, VE6AFO. Secretary Walter Supina, N3WS. Treasurer Frank Harris, WA4PAM. And our current board of directors, Lee Roy Baldwin, W0OFY, Val Irwin, W5PUT, Gary Harrison, K0BC, Tony Hirsch, W8RSH, Larry McAlvey, WA9JMO, Ken Simpson, W8EK, Robert Smith, KK3P, and Ernie Skip Swenson, WB6VVA, President Emeritus, Harry J. Daniels, W2HD. If you have need to contact our editor, Douglas Walbridge, his address is 17 Cedar Street, Hudson, Massachusetts, MA, 01749. His telephone number is 978-985-5814. Email address for Chuck, qcwaeditor@gmail.com. Let's begin with the President's message from the President, Bob Roeske, call N0UF, summer 2011. I want to talk to you about the ongoing search for a new QCWA general manager. Chuck's contract expires on March 31st, 2012. He's stepping down and taking Jan with him, although it may be the other way around. Chuck has been our GM since 2004 and served 7 years prior to that as our national secretary. Doug Walbridge, our very capable editor, is stepping down then as well. Their hard work and dedication are and have been very much appreciated. Team Walbridge will be missed. We'll have more information in the journal, and of course it's on the website also, www.qcwa.org. It's not too early to start planning for the fall QSO party. It happens on September 3rd. See you on the air. QCWA has many awards that recognize the contributions of our members to QCWA and to amateur radio. Please forward your recommendations for recipients to Ken Simpson, W8EK, Chairman of the Chapter Relations Committee. His email is as follows, w8ek@speakeasy.net. It's as it sounds, speakeasy, w8ek@speakeasy.net, by August 1st. Descriptions for the Hall of Fame Award, the Roll of Honor Award, the John DeBlacy Award, the Distinguished Service Award, the Member of the Year Award, and the Presidential Award are in the journal and on the website. I need your help with the problem we have. QCWA approved a 50-year chapter reward in 2006, and none have been issued because we don't have a certificate. If you're so inclined, please submit a design. It can be either portrait or landscape orientation and 8.5 by 11 inches. Submit your design to me, and I'll present them to the Board of Directors for selection. If you have intentions to submit a design, you can go to the website at www.qcwa.org/logos/index.htm for examples of our logo that you can use. Chapters that already qualify for this award include Cleveland Chapter Number 1, Cleveland, Ohio, chartered June 1, 1951. Chicago Area Chapter 2, Chicago, Illinois, chartered June 13, 1954. Delaware Valley Chapter 5, Columbus, New Jersey, chartered September 12, 1956. Pittsburgh Chapter 6, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, chartered January 8, 1957. Southern California Chapter 7, Los Angeles and Orange Counties, California, chartered January 15, 1957. Upper Midwest Chapter 8, Minneapolis and St. Paul, Minnesota, chartered November 1, 1957. Southwest Ohio Chapter 9, Dayton and Cincinnati, Ohio, chartered October 11, 1957. Michigan Chapter 10, Tustin, Michigan, chartered April 13, 1959. Northern California, Chapter 11, Los Gatos, California, chartered August 1, 1960. I hope to see many of you at the convention in Rhode Island. It's on September 9 through 11. A registration form is at the center of this journal. 73DE and 0UF, up Bob Roeske, President, Q. QCWA. The General Manager's Report. The General Manager, Chuck Walbridge, K1IGD, for the summer of 2011. 75-year awards. It was very gratifying this year to provide 15 75-year awards. When you read the bios provided, in parenthesis, sorry, I had to edit them down to meet our space requirements, close parenthesis, you realize the broad spectrum of experience of our members. One element stands out, the number of them who started with a crystal set or one-tube receivers or transmitters. With those limited tools, the mystery and excitement of ham radio was still there. Thanks to each of you for your many years of service to ham radio. Journal Chapter Report Requirements. A reminder that the requirements for a page count and number of photos per chapter report needs to be followed. We want to provide space for as many reports and other articles as possible within the pages we have available. Those numbers are posted on the bottom of the first page of the reports. Chapter reports. Thanks to all the chapter secretaries who submitted the chapter report used to maintain their chapter's charter. There were numerous changes, and these are factored into the list of active chapters posted on the web and also provided to each new member so they can be aware of all local active chapters. Requests for awards. Secretaries, when awards are requested for your chapter, it helps if you would include the name of the award recipient as well as his or her call. With many calls now being changed due to the vanity call sign program and reassigned calls, having both name and call helps to avoid errors. A personal remembrance. This issue features photos and the story of Leo Meyerson's 100th birthday celebration held in California in February. It was a shock to many of us when we learned that Leo had passed away just weeks after the event. My connection with Leo goes back to World Radio Labs in Council Bluffs, Iowa, which was my first teenage job. I remember Leo, his brother Owen, and other family members during the years I worked there during my high school and college years. For a 16-year-old, I was the proverbial kid in the candy store. It was a great group of people to work with, and I learned many practical skills. Leo was always around and very approachable. I also worked one summer in his crystal fabrication facility, Scientific Radio Products in Omaha, Nebraska. His wife, Helen, brought enjoyment to many in the community through her participation in local music groups. Leo himself spread his share of joy by tinkling the ivories on both the piano and organ. As I look back at those years, I find it ironic to be GM of QCWA, an organization to which Leo contributed an abundance of effort. It is not a story I could have written or imagined at that time. Thank you, Leo, for contributing to my dream and to many others. You led the way with personal involvement at all levels of ham radio. Your generous support of our scholarship program has helped many young college hams achieve their goals. Your personal interest and assistance will long be remembered. Leo, rest in peace. Date in 2011. Jan and I wish to thank all who stopped by the booth in Dayton. We also thank those who helped at the booth greeting members, new and old, and processing new memberships. Those visits to Dayton are mini reunions. We hope you had a great time and are looking forward to a splendid summer. Don't forget the QCWA convention in September. See you there. Final words. There is additional information about Leo Meyerson W0GFQ written by Jim Musgrove posted on the QCWA webpage. Jim wrote with Leo the book titled In Tune with Leo, an excellent biography of Leo and his many accomplishments. Check out that posting. Arrangements with a QSL card publisher have been completed, and a new version of the card is now available. On page 63 of the September 2011 journal, There's a listing of new prices and order information. The inside front cover is a color presentation of the card. The new vendor is KB3IFH QSL Cards, Randy Dorman. The general manager's report is signed 73 Chuck and Jan. Folks, on the page just before the general manager report, there is a very important article about the general manager. It's a replacement pursuit commentary. Are we looking for you? The Quintessentially Wireless Association Incorporated Board of Directors is announcing the search for a replacement for Chuck Walbridge, K1IGD, and his wife, Assistant Jan, who will be terminating his current contract with QCWA as general manager on March 31, 2012. This is an appointed position by the Board of Directors as stated in Article 5 of the QCWA bylaws. Currently, and in the past, the diverse responsibilities of the general manager's office have required the need for more than one person. This has been a secretary or a husband and wife team. The team skills must include a good business management background and solid computer and software skills. The selected individual or individuals will be required to establish an office, be responsible for the business aspects of QCWA, maintain QCWA membership records, and be responsible for the management of QCWA publications. The new general manager will determine the physical location of the new office. Some travel associated with QCWA meetings and Hamfest will be required. Job training sessions will be held at the current office in Framingham, Massachusetts in early 2012. Due to our incorporation status, this position is restricted to United States citizens. The selection will be based on proposals submitted by interested parties. Anyone interested should obtain a copy of our Request for Proposal, RFP, package from QCWA Secretary Walt Supina, spelled S-U-P-I-N-A. Call N0WS at 525 Ridge Avenue, State College, Pennsylvania, PA, zip code 16803, or by sending a self-addressed 9x12 envelope with $1.08 postage. The package is also available as a PDF file via email from QCWA Secretary Walt Supina, W3WS, at the following email, n3wsqcwarfp@gmail.com. The RFP contains additional details and requirements for the position with an outline of the content of the proposal for the position. Proposals must be submitted by August 1, 2011 to be considered. The committee may request a personal interview prior to selection. The search committee is composed of the following: Ken Olke, VE6AFO, Chairman; members Val Irvin, W5PUT, Gary Harrison, W0BC, and advisor Chuck Walbridge, K1IGE, current general manager. Contact any of these individuals if you have further questions. What follows next are the chapter reports that have been requested for a visually impaired or print impaired members. There are 8 chapter reports in this issue. We'll begin with Chapter 63, Central Oklahoma. Okay. Central Oklahoma Chapter 63 met at the Hometown Buffet in Oklahoma City for a quarterly meeting and elections. Except for one director position, all chapter officers were reelected. Donald Stevenson, WA5SME, was voted in to replace John Thomason, WB5SYT. John served the chapter well as director, but decided to step down to devote more time to family and personal pursuits. Our president, Skip Amos, was presented with the QCWA Meritorious Service Award for his years of unselfish and untiring work as president. His dedication and service to the chapter made him well deserving of this prestigious QCWA award. Several other chapter members were presented with the President's Appreciation Award. This award is given to members and non-members who have provided outstanding support and or services to the chapter. A good time fellowship and free lunch was enjoyed by all who attended the meeting in the city and gave us a chance to see other fellow hams who attended from all over the state. That report was filed with pictures by Richard Johnson, WA5EOD. Chapter 65, Niagara Frontier, New York. Robert S. Gay, K2GL of Buffalo, passed on to our chapter's Silent Key roster March 22nd at the age of 71. First licensed in 1955, Bob was a longtime member of the Niagara Frontier chapter. R.G. spent many years working at Sylvania Electronics and later on became chief engineer, partner, and VP of Steco Electronics. He had made the DXCC honor roll and was also interested in QRP, LF experimentation, and always helping others through his outstanding technical expertise. Thomas J. Whalen, W2QI of Williamsville, a charter member of Chapter 65 with a ham ticket going back to 1939, signed off at his terrestrial QTH on March 30th at the age of 88. Tom had served many years as president, treasurer, and on the board of directors of the Niagara Frontier chapter. Tom worked for over 30 years as a broadcast engineer at WBEN Radio. He, like Bob Gay, was a member of what Tom Brokaw would call the greatest generation. Tom had some most interesting stories to tell of serving as a radio operator in China during World War II. Most recently, he had been the trustee of our chapter station, called W2SD, and was the MC for our weekly QCWA 75-meter net for many years. Over the years, he attended almost every one of our QCWA meetings. He was at work, at home, and at play. A gentleman's gentleman. Attention vacation travelers, the Niagara Frontier with adjoining Ontario, Canada, is a tremendous vacation destination. If you're about the area on the second Saturday of any month, please join us for lunch at Brennan's Bowery Bar and Grill in Williamsville, just north of I-90, exit 49. The Chapter 65 Niagara Frontier Report was filed by Bob Rooney, called W2AET, Secretary. We go now to Chapter 70, National Capital Region, Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. The midwinter dinner meeting of National Capital Chapter 70 was held on February 15th at Roby's Spaghetti House in suburban Ottawa with 40 attendees. David Kahn, VE3KL, chaired the meeting as acting president. He announced that a number of volunteers had offered to take on administrative tasks and generally help the chapter executive with the operation of the chapter. John Gilbert, VE3CXL, was recognized as a new director, and Norm Rashley, VE3LC, was recognized as the new secretary. George Roach, VE3BNO, presented certificates recognizing performance in the QCWA CUSO party to Bob McKenzie, VA3RKM, and Gary Sharon, VE3VCF. George also noted that Croft Taylor, VE3CT, and now a silent key, would have also received the certificate if he were still alive. Glenn McDonald, VE3XRA, spoke after dinner about radio astronomy and its relation to amateur radio. Glenn received an MSc degree in radio astronomy from Queen's University at Kingston, Ontario in the year 1971. He trained as an astronomer in his early working days and now is involved in the management of radio spectrum regulation with the Canadian government. He drew our attention to some of the larger radio telescopes in the Western world and the work being done by volunteers to refurbish some of the older radio telescopes, both large and small. Chapter 70 Report, National Capital Region, Ottawa, Ontario, filed by David Parks, VE3AV and VA2, LGQ. Let's take a look at Chapter 95 now, the Capital District for the State of New York. Chapter 95 held its first gathering of the new year at the Glenville Queen Diner on Saturday, January 15th. In attendance were 8 members and 1 XYL president, Dave Borgovic, and R2J, thanked Frank Frisone, KA2QYE, in absentia for hosting the chapter's annual picnic. He also discussed initiatives to attract new members, including making presentations at other amateur radio clubs in the local area. He then gave a brief summary of the chapter's very healthy financial situation. Members enjoyed a pleasant social luncheon, something that chapter does every month at 1300 on the third Saturday at the Glenville Queen Diner on Route 50 in Glenville, New York. That report was submitted by Bill Damon, W2WLD. Let's go now to Chapter 112, Yankee, State of Rhode Island. Our winter meeting was held at White's of Westport Restaurant, Westport, Massachusetts, on February 26, 2011. There were 10 members and guests present. Chuck K1IGD commented that there were new QCWA caps ordered. Prices increased to $20. There was no increase in price since 2009. No change in the caps and the same company. The QCWA CUSO party will be on April 2, 2011 at 1800 Zulu hours, that's 2 p.m. for you civilians, for 24 hours ending at 2 p.m. Sunday. A multiplier of 3 points will be given for contacting the special event station W2MM. Also, we will be promoting the QCWA National Convention during the contest. Members of the New England chapters will be the W2MM event stations. The chapter will be sponsoring a brick on the ARRL Diamond Terrace. We will be making a one-time contribution of $250. The inscription will read, QCWA Chapter 112. Our next meeting will be April 9, 2011 at the Chateau Restaurant in Norton, Massachusetts. A picnic is scheduled for July 16, 2011 at the New England Wireless and Steam Museum in East Greenwich, Rhode Island. The big event will be the QCWA National Convention September 9, 2011 at the Crown Plaza, Warwick, Rhode Island. That report was submitted by Janice K4IJK, Secretary. Well, let's move southward now to Tidewater, Virginia, Chapter 119. Chapter 119 had a busy and fulfilling first quarter of 2011. Our chapter officers for 2011 include Vic Culver, W4VIC, President, Al Crawford, WA4TCJ, Vice President, Vern Fix, W4THN, Secretary, Barry Priddy, K5VIP, Treasurer. The board worked out a challenging program for the year ahead, including field trips, an IOTA expedition, and possibly a fall picnic, in addition to our monthly meeting schedule. As is our custom, we have a meeting in Hampton, Virginia, in the spring and again in the fall to accommodate members who live farther away from the Central Virginia Beach location. Programs for those meetings are being scheduled, and from what we know at this early date, there will be programs on a bona fide to the expedition, the first major activation of French Saint-Martin in 1976, programs on computer logging for contests, computer logging QSO management, and amateur radio utility programs for computers, and CQ100 Internet and Echolink Get On Air QSO activity. All in all, Chapter 119 plans to remain very active during 2011. Our first outing of the year was to the Virginia Military Air Museum, located in the southeastern part of Virginia Beach, still a semi-rural area. The Military Air Museum is a large collection of mostly World War II vintage warbirds, all painstakingly and beautifully restored to flying condition. On sunny days, it is possible that the retractable walls of the museum buildings might roll open and one of the warbirds rolled out and prepared for flight. Our turnout was smaller than expected for this outing, as many of our members and friends in the local amateur radio community were involved with emergency communication support at the established checkpoints along the route of the Shamrock Marathon, a long-established marathon event in the city. This was an unfortunate conflict, which was discovered only after the outing details had been scheduled. Our outing began with a special luncheon that was held at the clubhouse of the Great Neck Golf Course, and this proved to be a beautiful location, one we expect to visit again. Yes, the food was great. The latest addition to the flying stock of the museum is a B-17G, which will share billing with such planes as the Mustang P-51D, P-47 Thunderbolt, F-4U Corsair, and other aircraft, both U.S. and foreign vintage. Unfortunately, on the day of our visit, although the P-51D was rolled out to the flight line, the flight never materialized. We did enjoy the opportunity to get up close and personal with this large collection of flying aircraft. If you're vacationing in the Virginia Beach area anytime this summer, please do consider dropping in for a visit at our regular lunch meetings held the third Friday of each month. Information is available on the Chapter 119 website at www.qcwa-ch119.org. The Chapter 19 Tidewater, Virginia commentary was submitted by Vern Fix, W4THN, Secretary. We'll move along now to Chapter 149, Nutmeg, Connecticut, the Winter 2011 meeting and luncheon of the Nutmeg Chapter was held at Tommy's Restaurant in Middletown, Connecticut on Saturday, February 12. Chapter member and QCWA National Director Skip Svensson, WB6VVA, gave an overview of the upcoming plans for the 2011 QCWA National Convention to be held in Warwick, Rhode Island, during the second weekend of September. Our chapter is joining other New England-based QCWA chapters to co-host the convention. Members of the Nutmeg Chapter were the featured speakers at the Winter Luncheon. Everyone has a story, was the theme of the day, and a few interesting tales were shared with the entire group that had gathered. A few members of the Nutmeg Chapter recently enjoyed lunchtime visits with fellow QCWA member George Hart, W1NJM. Those in attendance exchanged and extended greetings on behalf of the chapter and QCWA. Speaking of W1NJM, the ARRL has a national award named in honor of Mr. Hart. Here's a brief description of the annual award. Quoting, "The George Hart Distinguished Service Award may be presented by the Board of Directors to the ARRL member whose service to the ARRL's field organization is of the most exemplary nature. The Distinguished Service Award is named in honor of George Hart, W1NJM, longtime communications manager at ARRL headquarters and chief developer of the National Traffic System. Nominations for this annual award are due at ARRL headquarters by November 1. That report for Chapter 149, Nutmeg, Connecticut, was filed by Steve Uwald, WV1X, Secretary. Thank you, Steve. Now, folks, our last requested chapter reading is Chapter 154, Leo Meyerson, Greater Palm Springs, California. Rancho Mirage, California was the venue for Leo Meyerson's W0GFQ 100th birthday celebration. After a delicious fried chicken luncheon under clear Southern California skies, 85 guests enjoyed a program emceed by Chapter President Gene Pentecost, W4IMT. Recognizing Leo's contribution to the community of Council Bluffs, Iowa, the City Council named him mayor for the day of his 100th birthday. Local chapter member Doug Bornstein, K6JV, read the citation, which detailed his many endeavors in the city. He first opened his store in 1938 during World War II. Leo manufactured crystals. After the war, he employed at one time over 350 people manufacturing ham equipment. A super idea came from Bob Broski, and 0UF QCWA president. On the QCWA reflector, Bob suggested every ham take one of their QSL cards and write "Happy 100th Birthday, Leo," and mail it to him. He received about 1,200 cards. In addition, Dave Bell, W6AQ, read the citation on a plaque from QCWA. It noted Leo's contribution to amateur radio over many years. Another distinguished visitor was John Jack Bellrose, VE2CB, Board of Directors member, Radio Club of America. Noting Leo was a fellow of that organization and over the years had shown exceptional capabilities for advancing the cause of radio communication, presented him with the Centurion Award. He noted Leo Morrison is probably the last living wireless pioneer who manufactured amateur radio equipment prior to World War II. He has held an amateur radio operator's license since 1928. Leo launched WRL, that's Wholesale Radio Labs, in 1935 in Council Bluffs, Iowa. WRL later, much later because of World War II, became World Radio Laboratories in 1946. Amateur radio operators throughout the world recognize Leo, and he has earned the respect of thousands of electronic enthusiasts. Bob Heel, K9EID, who has a reputation for supplying top-quality audio equipment, and his wife, Sarah, traveled quite a distance from their St. Louis area home to attend Leo's birthday celebration. He related how he and Leo shared an early talent, both played theater organs. Bob then presented Leo with a beautiful trophy microphone. Although we supplied only a simple keyboard, Bob agreed to play it for us. Some may recall, for Leo's 100th birthday, we promised a nude blonde would jump out of his cake to Happy Birthday Music by Bob Heel. A very tasteful bikini-clad blonde did jump out of a cake and presented a small one to Leo. Okay, so she wasn't nude. HOA rules prevented that. As the photo shows, Leo was very pleased. Jim Henderson, K6JAD, has a very extensive collection of equipment manufactured by Leo. He brought a very small sample for an exhibit at the entrance to the celebration. Now, in parentheses, some will note the map, typical of that distributed by Leo, has no zero call area. Close parentheses. The photo shows Jack Bellrose, VE2CV, and Leo next to a Globe King. Many thanks to Jim for the exhibit. Typical of Leo, in his kind and humble way, he ended the celebration with these words. "I want to thank everybody here. I am thrilled, so thrilled, for all the honors that have been bestowed on me and hope I prove worthy of them. Thank you, everybody." There was nothing more to be said. The report was submitted by Gene Pentecost, W4IMT, President of Chapter 154, Leo Meyerson, Greater Palm Springs, California. And folks, just as an afterthought, there are quite a few photographs listed with this chapter report of Leo, and they are very impressive, including the one with the young-looking lady that jumped out of the cake. What follows is also an additional remembrance of Leo Meyerson. It's titled Remembering Leo. Article is written by Dick Clark, K6GLB. The photos taken at Leo's 100th birthday party, photographs by Pat DeLong, KD7KEL. It goes as follows. "I was first licensed in 1954 while a junior in high school. I could ill afford radio equipment, and my parents were reluctant to finance my hobby, so I was reduced to perusing the ham magazines of that era. In the advertising sections, there always appeared ads from World Radio Labs of Council Bluffs promoting their inexpensive radio transmitters. With each ad, there appeared a picture of the store and the company owner, Leo Morrison, called W0GFQ. These ads turned up in so many journals, magazines, and handbooks during those years that his picture and name were forever etched onto the minds of anyone following this pursuit. There was never a single personality, except possibly a RRL founder, Hiram Percy Maxim, that was so associated with ham radio. Recently, I was more than surprised to learn that there was a luncheon. It was a QCWA 154 luncheon to honor Leo and award him a certificate for 80 years as a licensed amateur. I was quite surprised because, being new to the club, I had no idea Leo was still with us. I attended the luncheon along with a myriad of other hams filling the restaurant. Leo earned his license when he was 17, and today he is 97. He needs someone to steady him as he walks. When he speaks, he measures his words carefully, and his sense of humor and storytelling skills are well intact. Dave Bell, W6AQ, licensed over 55 years, traveled from his home in Hollywood to MC the occasion. Dave Bell is a former chairman of the ARRL's PR committee, personal friend of Leo Morrison, and a frequent speaker at ham radio gatherings. Introducing Dave was Gene Pentecost, W4IMT, QCWA Chapter 154 president. Dave asked Leo for his most memorable moment in ham radio. Leo's response exemplifies his subtle sense of humor. Paraphrasing Leo's answer, "I had this acquaintance who was traveling to Mexico City ask me for a ham referral there. I gave him the name of a friend. A week later, I called my Mexican friend and asked him if he had been contacted by my acquaintance. 'Oh, sure,' was his response. 'Do you want me to cash any more checks for him?' I told him, 'Hell no,' and asked him how much he had cashed. I sent my Mexican friend $650 to cover the bad checks." Leo was such an interesting personality, especially to those of us in ham radio, that I wanted to know more about his 97 years. Leo was born in Omaha in 1911, and in 1919 his family moved to Council Bluffs, Iowa, just across the Missouri River, east of Omaha. Leo earned his amateur radio license, W9GFQ, in 1928 after a run-in with the feds for unlicensed broadcasting on the AM bands for 3 months. When the Zero Call area came into being, he changed to W0GFQ. After college, Leo's father encouraged him to enter the family grocery business, but after several years, Leo sought his independence and opened his first ham radio and electronics store, naming it Wholesale Radio Laboratories. World War II curtailed the activities of ham radio, forcing Leo to seek an alternative vocation. He found this by producing hundreds of thousands of quartz crystals for the military, for which he received the coveted Army Navy E Award for achievement in producing materials for the war. After the war, Leo restarted the ham radio business under the slightly new name of World Radio Laboratories, hence the acronym WRL. This begins what I am to term, quoting, "the golden age of amateur radio," close quote. With the technology developed during the war, numerous companies began producing very fine ham radio equipment. Leo joined, quoting, "the rise of the boat anchors," close quote, by hiring engineers to design transmitters for the burgeoning market. Under the Globe brand, World Radio Laboratories sold numerous models, the best known of which was the Globe Scout, that sold over 50,000 units during its lifetime. In an interview, I asked about receivers. Expressing regret, Leo responded that he could never find an engineer capable of designing a receiver that he was comfortable in marketing. Asked about his successful marketing and advertising, Leo wanted to personalize his company. Each day, he went to the shipping department to sign every invoice with thanks, 73s, Leo, W0GFQ. One of his most successful advertising ventures was the production of his U.S. map of ham regions, of which he distributed over 750,000 copies. Conversing with Leo Morrison is a historic walk through this golden age. He speaks affectionately of friends such as Art Collins, Bill Halligan of Hallicrafter, Robert Drake, Faust Gonset, Lloyd Hammerlund, Bob Hendry, Jim Millen, and national radio engineers Fred Drake and Glenn Browning. He related conversations with Herb Johnson of Swan Electronics and Edgar F. Johnson of the Viking brand. Even though many of these men were competitors, to his credit, Leo never speaks negatively of anyone. Sometimes a smile or hesitation reveals an undeclared recollection, but Leo just moves on to the next subject. More than an icon to amateur radio, Leo Morrison is an icon to American citizenship. Leo capitalized on the freedoms we share as Americans to build businesses, create useful products, and generate employment. It is the Leo Morrisons that make this such a great country. Folks, this might be a good time to comment just a bit further about the Quarter Century Wireless Association Convention, which is being held in Warwick, Rhode Island at the Crown Plaza at the Crossings on September 9 through 11, 2011. The headquarters hotel and air travel destination is the Crown Plaza. It's 801 Greenwich Avenue, Warwick, Rhode Island, 02886. That's right near the airport in Warwick, Rhode Island. Theodore Green Airport, I believe it's called. A block of rooms are being held for this convention at the rate of $109 plus tax, which is currently 13%. For reservations, please call the hotel number 1-401-732-6000 and mention QCWA 2011 convention for this special rate. You may email the hotel reservation department directly at the word reservations at providencecri.crownplaza.com. There's also a complete listing of the formats that are going to be offered on Friday and Saturday at the convention site, and also tours. An exciting variety of tours and activities are available here in Rhode Island. With much to choose from to highlight the Warwick-Providence area, your host chapters have arranged an impressive selection for you, including on Thursday, tour of Federal Hill, a harbor tour, Brown University, and a stop at the State House. Friday, tour of Newport, Rhode Island, with a guided tour of one of the mansions, lunch, that's on your own, and shopping in Newport. Saturday, trip to the New England Wireless and Steam Museum and QCWA picnic, box lunch included. Sunday, trip to Hershoff, America's Cup Museum in Bristol, Rhode Island, includes admission. And a Monday special post-convention trip to the ARRL headquarters in Newington, Connecticut, and an opportunity to operate W1AW. You'll have to bring a photo of your license if you want to operate the station, of course. On page 29 of this QCWA Summer Journal is the listing and the form that it might be helpful in making the reservations. It quotes the prices and all a lot of extra detail. Now, all the proceeds will be donated to the QCWA Scholarship Fund. The summer 2011 issue also has a large piece dedicated to the 75-year awards. Listed here are 15 amateurs, QCWA members, of course, who are receiving the 75-year awards. Following that, there are 7 additional commentaries by various of those gentlemen that you might find very interesting. So let's give the listing for the 75-year awards first. Nicholas Alimpich, W8PYW. G. Richard Beckham, W7FVM. John P. Bergio, W2JB. Daryl Erickson, W7GDP. Fred Farinet, Jr., W8PYL. John Janega, W2JPD. Paul Goodwin, K06D. Thomas Kipps, KA6Z. Lee Knirko, W9MOL. Raymond R. Larson, W7NMK. George A. Lucci, W6NVN. Richard S. O'Brien, NJ2J. Alfred Obritz, N2AO, David D. Robb, W0YRN, and Philip M. Young, W1JD. CTR. Congratulations, gentlemen. Our first biography, autobiography, is Leo Kinnerko, W9MOL. My interest in radio began as a pre-teenager when my father gave me his crystal radio with a headset. The only station I could hear was the weather report from nearby Chicago Municipal Airport, that's now Midway Airport. I experimented with a coil and slider around a Quaker oatmeal box, which gave me more tuning choices. I built a small one-tube broadcast receiver, which I could install on my bicycle. I then heard about amateur radio and, together with my Boy Scout buddy Bernard Cash, studied theory and the Morse code. Using money earned from delivering newspapers, I bought a Hallicrafter Sky Buddy and spent hours listening to 160-meter repeater conversations, noting information on 3x5 index cards. Together with Bernard, we studied the theory and practiced Morse code. When we felt ready, we went to the FCC office in Chicago, downtown post office building, and passed a license examination as 12-year-olds. We both undertook building 160-meter transmitters. Several months later, the postman delivered my license for W9MOL. Bernard was issued W9LDC. I went on the air and amazed my initial contacts by knowing their names and personal information from the index cards. My favorite repeaters were CFMC and CFAR. Late in 1993, I received a phone call from Ted Heitzhecker, a former general manager of QCWA, asking me to take over the financial spot for the old timers club. I told him I would help out. Ted died on December 25th, only a few days later. Bert Wells, W5JNK, eventually took over as general manager of OOTC. We nominated Troy Witterman, W6HV president, and I accepted the role as treasurer. Troy and Bert still have those offices today. I maintained the financial records and prepared financial statements quarterly with comparison to last year and to budget. OOTC published Spark Gap Times, which preserved the very early days of amateur radio. Amateur Radio News Service, which billed itself as a service to amateur radio news, came to my attention. Ralph Anderson, called K0NL in Holton, Kansas, was the originator and editor of the ARNS Bulletin. He wrote, produced, and mailed the ARNS Bulletin for many years at his own expense. I volunteered to help in recruiting new members, set nominal dues, and was appointed VP membership. We pointed out that the success of radio clubs was largely dependent on their publishing a newsletter on club activities. We concluded an annual publications contest rating club publications on various points. Members were enthusiastic, especially those that earned high points for their publications. Ethel Smith, call K9LMB, was extremely helpful in recruiting officers for ARNS. In 1988, I nominated Anderson for the Dayton Hamvention Award. Unfortunately, he was not selected. After completing 25 years as a ham, I joined QCWA and the Chicago Area Chapter. Ethel Smith, K4LMB, served as general manager at that time. The chapter met quarterly with a special summer brunch. The Chicago area chapter did not issue any publication at that time. Based upon my experience with ARNS, I volunteered to start a club newsletter. Aero Erickson, K-A-9-D-Y-S, chose the name and was extremely helpful in providing copy for the meeting notices. An area we stressed was to include call signs in member death notices. Mike Brost, W9FTS, sponsored many programs by showing DVDs using equipment he brought to the meetings. Gil Kois, a W9BUB, a secretary, had a large part in maintaining mailing lists and addressing the periodical. He was on call in solving and updating my computer requirements. 1976 was the 200th birthday of our nation, Joe Schroeter. W9JUV, editor of a weekly newsletter called HR Report, and I organized a relay consisting of enlisting at least one radio club from the capital of each of the 50 states to send a congratulatory birthday message from the governor of their state using relays, if necessary, to the President of the United States. Joe, using the weekly HR report, was able to complete the roster of amateur stations in every capital. The event was mostly successful with a Washington, D.C. station, the designated receiving station for the president. After graduating from the Walton School of Commerce, I sat for the Certified Public Accountants examination and passed all three elements at first setting. I was employed by Barrow, Wade, Guthrie & Company, CPAs, which later merged with Pete Merrick Mitchell & Company, as an audit manager for 39 years. I then became treasurer of the Dr. Scholl Foundation, a multi-million dollar charitable entity where I was employed for 15 years until retirement. I took my 2-meter handheld on trips to New York, Boston, and Charlottesville, Virginia, visiting our financial managers. I married Phyllis in 1948, and we have 3 daughters, 5 grandchildren, and 4 great-grandchildren. Corrine and Marilyn are teachers, and Carolyn works as a CPA and serves as our family business manager. All three, plus a part-time caregiver, take care of us and allow us to live in our Oak Ridge, Illinois house. We enjoy reading large print books supplied by the local library. I have spent very little activity on CW or low bands because of problems with suitable antennas and broadcast interference. That concludes commentary by Leo Canerco, W9MOL. Our next commentator, Paul S. Goodwin, call W06D. I was a 16-year-old back in the fall of 1934 and quite nervous about taking the ham license exam. The code speed then was 10 words per minute, and I struggled hopelessly and actually gave up in the middle of the test. The RI, the examiner, had the title radio inspector in the LA office for sending by hand. He noticed I had thrown down my pencil, but he kept going. Finally, out of embarrassment, I picked up the pencil and began putting down letters. When the code test was over, I got up to leave. I believe the IR's name was Harry Linden, though I'm uncertain about the first name. He called after me, "Just a minute, son. You got the last 39 characters correct?" 50 being the required minimum. "Stay around for a second session," which I did. He started sending again, CQ, 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 CQ. D, E, W, and so forth. At the 11th character, I gave a sigh of relief and threw down my pencil. In those days, applications also had to send Morse code. I don't remember sending. But I do remember there was a former maritime radio operator also taking the exam, and the RI kept exclaiming about his beautiful fist. To this day, at age 91, I feel humble and grateful to a very fatherly R.I. who launched my AM radio experience. It was a good example of the helpfulness we hams extend to one another, and it came from within the commission. My first call was W6MVI, the mighty vicious insect, and my QSL card had a tough-looking bug holding a cigar. It was quite out of place for a 16-year-old, but years later, other hams who didn't recall my handle remembered my QSL card. I kept that call even after the war, but lost it during years I was raising a family. After the kids grew up, I got back into ham radio, starting out as a novice. Our local radio club started license training lessons, which helped me get up to date because a lot of things had changed from the double sideband AM days, but not my desire. I remember driving down to the FCC office in Long Beach, California to take the test. It was the last day of multiple choice answers for the code test, and there was a huge mob waiting for the doors to open. When they did, the examiner said they were giving a 20-word-per-minute test first. A loud groan erupted among the crowd. I decided to go in early and try to copy 20 words per minute. At least I'd have a seat for the 13-word-per-minute test if I failed. Well, the early morning W1AW code practice CW bulletins, which I copied each day just prior to leaving for work, did the trick. I passed 100%. Next came the written test, which had to be graded in sequence prior to taking the next one. On those, I missed 3, 4, and then 5 questions going to general, advanced, and then extra in one session. I felt quite proud until the examiner told me that I was the 4th or 5th applicant to accomplish that feat that day. I finally retired from working at age 67, but not from ham radio. My wife, KF6GW, and I decided to explore a beautiful USA. We purchased a used 26-foot motorhome equipped with 2 meters, 220, and 440 megahertz radios, camera equipment, and other hobby items, and took off. We did the 21 southern states in about 10 weeks. Ham radio was our salvation on many occasions, guiding us to needed repair facilities, avoiding bad road conditions, or, most importantly, meeting new hams for eyeball QSOs. We continued motor homing with larger and larger rigs, both vehicular and electronic, and traveling through more and more states. We've missed only 4 until the time came to hang it up. Today, we divide our time between our lifelong home near Pasadena and our vacation home in the gated senior park near Palm Springs. Ham radios now, mostly via repeaters using handhelds, but we do have HF rigs in both locations in case of earthquakes, etc. Ham radio has been a wonderful hobby and very much a part of our lives. We feel blessed. That concludes the commentary by Paul S. Goodwin, KO6D. The following commentary is by Al Obrist, N2AO, first licensed in 1935 at age 17 as W2IYR. My first QSO was with the W2IBW, now a silent key, on November 14, 1935. My transmitter was a 45-tube Hartley oscillator, and a 57 and 56 tube regenerative receiver, all homebrew. My Elmer W2VL, also silent key, gave me a 47 tube and an Extel. So with those parts, I built a 47 oscillator driving a 45 power amp with 18 watts input, big time. I also built the transceiver for the 5 meter band with only 2 tubes. Things were a lot simpler in those days. A new transmitter was built in 1938 with a 6L6 driving and 807 and operating on the 20-meter band, Farran DX. In 1947, after the war, I was located in Seattle, Washington. This time, I built a new transmitter with a pair of 807s in the final and 807s modulators for 20, 40, and 80 meters. I used a surplus Army receiver, a BC-342. The bands were really hot in those days, and I used the call W2IYR/7. Over the years, I operated in these locations with these calls. 1949-50, operating from State College, Pennsylvania, as W3IYR. 1950 through 1952, from Cleveland, Ohio, as W8ISD. 1953, from Syracuse, New York, with my original call, W2IYR. 1956, new call, N2AO. My radio activities are now limited because as an active member of the Ida Rundeck Mountain Club, I am spending more time climbing mountains than calling CQ. 2011, still in Syracuse. I do not want to be a snowbird. Using all commercial equipment these days, a Japanese transceiver, Heathkit amplifier, and a Mosley tri-band Yaki. Also, I have some VHF gear, 4, 6, and 2 meters, and even 432 megahertz once in a while. That's it, until they write SK. We thank Al Urbitst and 2AO for that commentary. Our next gentleman, Richard S. O'Brien, call NJ2J. There's a picture here of Richard. My friend Jim and I were non-licensed members of the high school ham club. We got to do all the fun projects, such as boiling the antenna feed line spreaders in wax. We continued in the State College Ham Club, and after our first year, his dad drove us the 100-plus miles to Los Angeles to take the FCC exam. Jim got the call W6OEW, and I became W6OEU. My first QSO was a 40-meter CW contact with a ham in Yuma, Arizona. Soon, 5 meters was the thing, and I built a super regen transceiver and installed it in my dad's car. In Southern California, I'd drive up a small mountain and work some guy doing the same thing 100 miles away. It was 1936. 2 more years at UC Berkeley, then to graduate school at Stanford. I had studied and passed the radiophone first-class exam and worked 3 summer relief sessions at NBC's KPO, located a few miles from the Stanford campus. I had a home-built rig in my dorm room with a long wire antenna tossed out the 5th-floor dorm window. Then came Pearl Harbor. During World War II, I became part of Dr. Thurman's radio research lab at Harvard, and went to our branch in England, and finally to a desk at the U.S. Embassy in Paris. Despite the name, the lab worked under the OSRD on radar detection and jamming countermeasure. After the war ended, I joined the CBS engineering department and soon got very busy building the studios, master controls, telescenes, transmitters, mobile units, videotape systems, and computer-controlled stations needed for the TV era. I was so busy doing these things such as TV City, Broadcast Center, and many O&O stations, not to mention film recording the British coronation in 1953. There was no time for ham radio, so the old license expired. As retirement approached, I remembered what fun I had had as a ham. The answer? Down to the FCC office in Manhattan to get relicensed as WB2JEC. After a few years, this was upgraded to NJ2J. I got back on the air with a Kenwood 820 brought from Japan by one of the CBS engineers. I kept skets with old friends, retired bosses, and many others. Did DXCC on CW and phone. Did several WAS rounds, including 160 meters. Also enjoyed a Kenwood 120 on my sailboat, and finally acquired a Kenwood 940. I joined the QCWA Founders Chapter in the late 1970s and began a 10-year stint as Secretary of the Hudson Valley Chapter 181, when it was founded in 1992. Now, in a retirement department right on the Hudson River, I have the remains of my old station on a card table with a mobile whip antenna mounted on a 5th-floor balcony. From here, I've worked 42 states and many parts of the world. I go to a local ham breakfast every Thursday. It is still a lot of fun. We thank Richard S. O'Brien, call NJ2J, for his commentary. Next up is Dave Robb, W0YRN. In 1936, as W9YRN, I began operating as a 14-year-old kid at Headville, Kansas. My power source was the 32-volt DC Elco light plant located in the family garage. I have a PhD in electrical engineering and have taught at the University of Kansas and at Iowa State University. I have worked as a consultant to electronic utilities and electric power systems engineering. Thank you again for the honor from QCWA. Well, we thank Dave Robb, W0YRN. Ladies and gentlemen, there were also submissions by George A. Lucci, W6NVN, and Raymond R. Larson, W7NMK. But unfortunately, I'm not going to have enough time on this recording to get those two in, so my apologies indeed to George A. Lucci and Raymond R. Larson. I will conclude the readings, however, with Publicity, Public Relations, and the Lost Member Column by Larry McAlvey, called W89JMO. Communications between your elected board of directors and our membership has been sparse and mostly occurring in one direction, from the board to the members, usually via the journal. I believe the membership would appreciate another avenue for this purpose and an easier route to reach other QCWA members and chapters, and there is a rather simple method to accomplish this. We have two, the QCWA reflectors, one for the board and chapter officers, and the other for anyone wishing to sign on. However, as I understand it, only about 300 folks are members of the general open reflector. This is an excellent vehicle to instantly contact your fellow QCWA members, even those around the world. But so far, it seems underutilized. Let us agree to change that and join the small group of QCWA reflector users. A fairly simple way to sign up for this service is to go to www.qcwa.org, click on the site index, and hit the R to take you to that area. Then click on the reflector link. Click the unsubscribe slant subscribe button and follow the instruction that comes up. After you submit your email address and a password, you will be a part of the QCWA reflector. There are other ways to sign up, but this one seems pretty straightforward to me. Another concern is our biannual QSO party. We are receiving fewer and fewer contact logs with each passing contest. George Roach, VE3BNO, our activities manager, wrote in the Spring Journal that the logs submitted for fall of 2010 was the lowest in 10 years. I know conditions have not been that good, but we are looking for ways to revitalize this activity. If you, the membership, know of something that might improve participation in this area, please let George and I know. I'm still looking for interesting programs that can be easily shared with other QCWA chapters and groups. It seems chapters that include a program with their meeting are more structured and enjoy a greater member participation in those meetings. I'm very much looking forward to our 2011 National Convention in Warwick, Rhode Island, this September 9 to 11th. If you can join us, please do so. It should be a wonderful gathering of our membership. As always, I welcome your suggestions, comments, and criticisms. I may be reached by email at the call sign wa9jmo@wi.net. and or by telephone at area 262-639-7327. This concludes the reading for the QCWA Journal for the summer of 2011. Just another reminder that the business office for the Quarter Century Wireless Association Incorporated is P.O. Box 3247, Framingham, Massachusetts, zip code 01705. The voice phone mail is 508-405-1930. Fax number is 508-405-1965. And you can email the Quarter Century General Manager at qcwagm@rcn.com. The editor is Doug Walbridge. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Ham System in cooperation with the Quarter Century Wireless Association. The Courage Handy Ham System is located at 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may be reached at area 763-520-0512. Or at email address, lowercase, one word, handyham@courage.org. That's spelled H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M @courage.org. The website for the Handy Hams, www.handyham.org. org. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. My geographic location, or QTH, is Dartmouth, Massachusetts. Thanks a lot for listening along with me again for this issue of the Quarter-Century Wireless Association Journal, the summer of 2011, 73.